Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetta, here with my co-host Ron Reardon and our producer Lee Cantor. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, guys. How? What are we? Weekend? End of the week?
I don't know what day of the week it is. I don't remember.
It is Thursday.
So how was it? Good week?
Yeah, good.
Launch some things?
Always trying to launch things.
Yep, business has been brisk.
Brisk?
Well, you know, with the economy the way it is, people continue to ask about getting into their own businesses because I think they're in part afraid to lose their jobs that they have, unfortunately, and a lot of people have lost their jobs, so they're looking for alternatives.
Right. I heard, I don't know if we discussed on this show, but flat is the new up.
Yeah.
Flat is the new up. That's kind of like the book many years ago called I've Been Down So Long It Looks Like Up to Me.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, even at like all these retail stories I keep seeing, if somebody's sales are down 1 or 2%, they're happy.
Right.
So it's better than being out of business. So
are you seeing that? Are there more people getting into inventing and more people are taking shots or they're... Yeah, I know. Hesitating right now.
For me particularly, you know, in June of last year, things just really took off and stayed, you know, steady. And it kept going until April of this year. And all of a sudden in April, everything went totally dead. You know, no phone calls, nobody coming in. And but now that at the end of May, things started picking up again. So it looks like it must be a cycle there.
Yeah.
Well, see, Ron's got an interesting business because the first step, as we have always discussed, is you got to do that patent search. So if somebody's curious, that's one of those curiosity things that, you know, you need to fulfill. You got to do that patent search.
But right.
It's been busy. The leads, the amount of calls, the emails are increased greatly over
right.
the last few months.
Because I would be curious say you're in a job, you have a job, and this is something that's kind of bugging you in the back of your head, which I'm sure a lot of these inventors go through, where they're thinking, I got to do something. This is too good of an idea, and I'm kind of hurting financially. I should, you know, my investments are going in the toilet. You know, and I'm trusting a mutual fund, you know, why don't I bet on myself a little bit and take a shot on this idea that it's been bugging me?
Yeah, what I've been scratching my head on is why was, you know, April dead, but then the end of May,
right.
And May, most of May, and then it started picking up, and the only thing I can think of is, you know, school's out.
School, right, now they got more time.
Yeah, I don't know if they had graduations going
right,
on.
Right, they were distracted.
And then all of a sudden, you know, okay, kids are out of school, and it's time to go forward with my idea.
Right.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any particular reason, but yeah, you get those, you know, those lulls and then those real fast-paced times. But, you know, Ron, one of the things we were talking about before we got on today was licensing and what people know and don't know about licensing.
Yeah, because a lot of folks will come in and say, I've got an idea. I just want to sell my idea to a company that will run with it. And they're thinking licensing.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, licensing is not as clear-cut and as easy as people think. Otherwise, you know, obviously, I'd be licensing things on my own and trying to make some money, but it's a process.
Why don't we define the terms? Like, what does licensing mean?
Well, licensing, and Ron, you're the patent pro, so if I get this wrong, you can correct me. But in essence, you're leasing your intellectual property to another company.
Right. It's like renting, okay?
Right. So, you know, if I file for a patent and that patent gets issued, now I can go up to and approach a corporation and say, look, I've got a product, I've got patent protection on it. I don't want to manufacture it and sell it on my own. Company XYZ, how about you do it for me? And
yeah, because when you have issued patent rights, you have the right to prohibit other people from making, using, selling, or importing the idea. So when you license those rights, you're basically licensing an agreement not to sue them.
Yeah, and that's a nice little feature there. But
so you're giving them permission to sell it,
right?
Sell your thing for you, basically.
Right, because, you know, when you have a issued patent rights, let's say it's on a device, okay?
Right. Why don't we go through an example? Do you have an example of one of your clients maybe that had licensed something?
Well, I'll give you an example of someone I know, you know,
okay.
Here locally, is that she invented some stuff, okay, that went inside of a cushion for outdoors that when it rained, it dried very quickly. Like
right.
one hour later, you can sit on this cushion and you're not going to get wet.
Okay? Right.
And so she had an issued patent on that, and she licensed, I think, for over 12 years, you know, the rights to manufacture that to a particular manufacturer.
Now, this manufacturer is the only one that's allowed to manufacture it now, or
yeah,
are they allowed to license it to other people as well?
The way that she had the agreement written was that they had an exclusive, only they were going to be producing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, think about it. If I'm a company and Ron has an idea or a patented product and he approaches me, I don't want him going around offering the same deal to other companies, because if I'm going to put my money into it, if we're going to market it, I'm going to get my sales guys out there, we're going to promote it, and I'm spending money, I want Ron to work with me exclusive. So it's very common to have exclusivity deals with inventors.
Now, but how do you protect yourself now? What happens if those people never sell any?
Well, you know, that's what gets to be really interesting when you look at all the different clauses that can be inside of a license agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And I should give a disclaimer here. This is not legal advice, just education. Mm-hmm. That you have the right to have it exclusive only for them or for them and you, okay, if you want to retain the rights yourself to actually do it. Or it could be exclusive for a particular period of time, or it could be exclusive for a particular territory, like only Georgia or
all
the U.S.
But what about based on sales? Like, if I give you the exclusive and you've sold two, you know, you're just tying up my product. I could set, you know, try another manufacturer. Maybe they'll sell more.
Yeah, and that could be one of the clauses in the license agreement is that it's based on sales, but there could be a minimum annual guarantee.
Oh, okay.
So that even if they don't sell anything at all, you still get some
paid,
money.
Right.
And then there could also be an upfront payment to start the license agreement.
Mm-hmm. In other words, there are so many different ways to cut a deal.
It's just a negotiation, right?
Yeah, and like Ron said, there are definitely some things that that are common. And again, we're not attorneys here, so this is just our thinking and based on experience. But one of the common scenarios you get is somebody will call me up and say, Jim, I just want a license, and they're very quick to sign a deal with a corporation.
Because somebody said, okay, and they think, oh, I'm done now.
Right, and I always say, listen, you got to take those deals, have an attorney look them over, make sure that basically it's not one-sided in favor of the company.
Right, well, isn't that typical when the other people's lawyers are giving you the contract?
Yeah, because they'll come in with their boilerplate.
Right, exactly. And it looks out for them, not you.
It looks out for them, not you, and that's when you need your attorney looking out for you.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a scary thing. Because I've certainly talked to enough people that have really lost not only a lot of potential sales, but then they lose the rights to go out and work with other companies or even sell it themselves because they got tied up in a one-sided deal.
Right, and the time, they could lose time in the marketplace, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the market window might pass you by.
Mm-hmm. I mean, think about this for a second. If I have a product that is a seasonal product, for example, and I want to get it in stores, you know, this winter, and I approach companies now, if they don't put the effort into selling it. So if my contract says, okay, you have to go out and you got to market and sell the product, and well, maybe they're busy with their own other products and they're like, yeah, we'll get to this product in 6 months. Well, now you've sat by, watched the whole season go by, and what recourse do you have?
Right.
Yeah, and it's real typical with a lot of companies is that they're preparing today, you know, for what they're going to be doing next year.
Right, they're a year ahead. Right.
Yeah, that's common with retails and with corporations. I mean, big companies have to do a lot of planning.
How do you know if your product is a good fit for a licensing agreement?
Well, that's I don't know if there's any hard and fast rule. I think it's just a function of if you've come up with something that you've researched that you can actually prove to some way, whether it's through online consumer surveys or focus groups or other methods to show that there's a demand, then let's say it's a baby product and you go to a baby company and say, look, this product's missing in the marketplace. We've done the research. There's a demand for it based on our surveys and whatnot. And then that gives you a compelling argument to be able to try to strike a licensing deal.
Yeah, and because one of it is how long is this going to last? You know, I think to me it's easier to talk about what would not be a good licensing product. If it's a fad like the pet rock, you know, it's good for 1 year and then it's gone.
So
nobody wants any more pet rocks.
License that.
You wouldn't want to license a fad. Okay?
Right.
But something that's going to sell year after year after year, then that would be great.
And you usually see technology products that often seem to get the most licensing deals because technology is sustainable and it could be used in other applications.
What would be an example of a technology product?
I mean, again, I'm not an engineer, but I mean, like you look at all the cell phones and all these you know, gaming devices and things that have, sometimes it's not the actual device, it's the components inside. So maybe they've created something that allows a phone to use different applications or to do whatever. And those things are very valuable, and even though they may not last forever, there's a lot of money in them because often those items are used by millions or hundreds of millions of people in some cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one item I'm familiar with out in California, there's an individual that's a Disney licensee, and he has the right to put Disney characters on things, of course, with approval. And he came up with a thing that I think he calls Hot Picks, and it's basically a guitar pick, and it's got, you know, the image of the cars and the Little Mermaid and things like that on the guitar pick. nobody actually uses those picks to pick a guitar.
Right.
They actually buy them in 7-Elevens, you know, and they just kind of give them as gifts, you know, and things
right.
like that.
Collectibles.
It's a collectible, yeah.
But that kind of licensing different than what we're talking about, right? That would be somebody is buying the Disney license from Disney to get permission to use their images.
Yeah, that's a little more complex. I think what we run into most of the time is somebody will call Ron up or call myself up and say, I've got a product and I want to license it to a company. And most of the time, unfortunately, they do that because they think it's faster, easier, and cheaper, and they really just don't want
to do it themselves. Like, right. This is what you're comparing it against. You're saying, okay, I have this idea, I got this concept, and I'm going to have another company build it, market it, and sell it.
Right.
As opposed to me doing it myself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I tend to oversimplify things, and when I discuss about having your own company, selling your product yourself versus licensing, I'll say, okay, licensing, it's, you know, it's lower risk, but it's less money.
Sure.
And owning your own company is higher risk, but potentially more money.
Right.
Right. And of course, it's more work, and some people have day jobs, and they can't afford to come up with the money for a startup. So if Ron has a product and he approaches me, he's got two paths. He could either try to license it, and that costs very little. You have to obviously create a sell sheet, and you got to do your homework and understand the business. But if you start up a company, it's manufacturing, it's packaging,
right.
It's websites. And, and some of these people don't have the time in addition to not having the money. So they just think the easier route, and it often can be, is just to try to strike a licensing deal.
Now, why don't we talk about the nuts and bolts about let's try to striking a licensing deal? Like, how do you even go about doing that? You mentioned sales sheets. How do you know who the right manufacturer is? How do you even approach them? Who do you talk to?
Well, I mean, for starters, obviously, I think it's important for people to go out and either, you know, go get, I mean, there's plenty of books and there's plenty of good courses that exist that are not expensive that can teach you the 101 of licensing. And obviously, starting with a good sales sheet and a good product concept is step one.
Yeah, and Nolo Press puts out a really great book on licensing your great invention. Mm-hmm. Has a CD in there with forms. And I always tell folks, read that book so that you know all the clauses are supposed to be in there, and then go hire a licensing professional.
Right, but can you do any of this on your own? Can you make that one sheet by yourself, and can you start knocking on doors at manufacturers?
Yeah. People do, whether or not they're going to be successful.
Yeah, my particular opinion is that the absolute worst person to be in a license agreement is the inventor.
Right.
Because, you know, they're too emotionally attached to it. They tend to be too greedy. They're going to want too much, and folks are going to walk away. You know, the manufacturer or whoever you're trying to license to is going to walk away from the deal.
Yeah, it can't be about them. It's got to be about the company and
right.
And
so
their
who
customers.
Would represent this inventor then?
There are licensing agents out there, and how they typically work is they won't ask for anything up front. Sometimes they'll ask for a nominal fee to prepare a presentation, but often if they choose your product, and it's, I think I need to be clear that most good agents won't accept most products. They have to really have contacts in that particular industry and feel that the product could actually be a good fit, but then they go around and they knock on doors for you, but they take a percentage of
right.
your royalties.
Yeah, and you can go to LES.org, the Licensing Executive Society,
mm-hmm.
and it lists all the professional licensing executives in throughout the United States by state, and you can find somebody in your particular area.
So if you're not comfortable making cold calls or presenting to big corporations, I mean, using an agent's definitely a good idea. And, hey, look, that's the easy way out. I mean, if you don't have to really
right.
just come up with the idea of, you know, file for patents or have a patent. But I think in a lot of instances, Ron, you'll agree that many people will, if they're crafty enough, will have the company that they want to license to pay for the patent applications and
right.
and but Ron, I don't know. I mean, how much you've seen of that?
How would that work?
Well, you would put that in the license agreement that any continuing work on. I mean, if you already had one patent, okay, but you had some others, you know, in the mill, or if they are related, or if they wanted to have file in other countries and things like that, you would actually put a clause in there that any amounts of money that need to be spent on the protecting intellectual property that the person you're licensing to, that they would pay for that.
And then you would still own the patent, or the company
yeah.
would own it?
No, you're owning it. You're still renting it out.
Uh-huh. And they're just paying to fund you coming up with better ideas to make it better?
Right.
Well, look, if they think that there's big money in it for them later on, I don't see why they wouldn't spend, you know, the
yeah.
5, 10, 20 grand to get things moving when there's
right.
you know
yeah.
potentially millions in it for them.
Yeah, one of my favorite, the true stories I read about 5 years ago, I think, in Entrepreneur Magazine, was John Osher, who invented the spin toothbrush. And
right.
originally that was called the Dr. John Spin toothbrush. And he originally went to Procter & Gamble to license it, and they turned him down. So he started his own company, made them, was selling them in a particular Walmart, and they sold real well. And then Procter & Gamble got new management who came to him and licensed it from him. It launched as a Crest brand because they went to Procter & Gamble and helped them launch it. And then Procter & Gamble ended up buying the patent and the company from them. Okay, and so I think for over $400 million.
Wow.
That's it?
That's a lot of toothbrush.
$400 million? Forget it. I'll just do it on my own. It's not worth the time.
But, yeah, he started off, you know, trying to license it. No success. He had started a company before with a mechanized rotating lollipop, and so he knew the drill of how to start a company and all and manufacturing. And so he was doing it himself, and then he licensed it, and then he sold it.
So that's kind of ironic that the knowledge base for a toothbrush was a candy, piece of candy.
Yeah, they took the same motor in that rotating lollipop, and they turned it on in and tweaked it a little bit.
So that's job security for the toothbrush. You get sell the candy, the toothbrush.
It's always interesting how things morph. If you're familiar with Pringle potato chips, mm-hmm. you know where the idea came from to actually make those little thin chips that go in the can? Mm-hmm. It was from a soap making machine. I mean, think about maybe a Dove bar.
All right, it looks like that shape.
Okay, the fella had a soap making machine. Okay, and decided if he kind of squeezed down the mold, he could make potato chips. You know, come from a mush. Okay, instead of a mush of soap, it was a mush of potatoes, and stack them in there, and that's how it came from.
There you go.
Now, I'm never going to look at those Pringles the same again.
Because now they're thinking of that. It looks like a Dove bar. Now in my mind.
Oh, man. You may have ruined it for me, Ron. Although somebody gives me a can of them, I'm going to probably eat them. So
well, I mean, when you think about Pringles, I don't know if you saw that they used to put jokes on those. Okay.
Oh, really?
They actually used food coloring. You know, they only did it for a short period of time. I guess it didn't sell well. But I thought it was a great idea that, you know, you'd sit there and you pick up a chip, and on one side of the chip it had a question, and on the other side it had the punchline of the
joke.
There
you go. Really?
I thought this is
that's
cute.
How I like my food products with words on it.
Yeah, processed, you know, food dye and coloring.
Exactly. I mean, I better.
The chips might not be ultra healthy to begin with. Don't add anything to it. Don't wreck it. I like them how they are, nice and salty. But, you know, I think one of the barometers for, you know, potential success is when you have a product, and obviously if you go to an agent who their business is to make money on the back end of a deal, really believes in the product.
So they're going to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, if an agent's going to spend their time and they're not getting any money up front, I mean, I wouldn't want to waste my time knocking on doors if I didn't think something
had a shot.
Was smart. But there's a lot of professional inventors, so to speak, that are idea people, and they just constantly come up with things, and it's a numbers game. They try themselves to go get products licensed, and they know that only one out of every so many will actually get a shot at getting a licensing deal, but they come up with dozens and sometimes hundreds of ideas, mm-hmm. and they're always simple things. And I think the simple things, as opposed to some of the technology things, it seems like the things in the middle don't get licensed in my world. It seems like simple things, like you take something, a kitchen utensil, and you change it, just one little thing, and all of a sudden it's this craze about that product. Those things tend to be licensed very commonly, and versus, you know, these middle ground, you know, I don't know what they do. Is it really a new market kind of a product?
So I guess that would help when a person's putting their idea together or putting it on paper to make it as simple and as easy to understand as possible.
Yeah, I think that'd be real helpful. I mean, I think we've talked before about the little, what I call a Barbie table, the little round piece of plastic with three legs that goes in the pizza boxes.
Right.
You know, that's a patented item that I believe got licensed out to one of the major pizza companies.
Yeah. Right.
And again, you're talking about simple.
Yeah.
I mean, how simple can a little piece of round plastic with three legs on it be? You know,
maybe one with two legs. I don't know how much easier it gets. But see, sometimes it's always those little changes to everyday items that, and you know, I see this a lot of moms. Like more and more, I get calls from that come up with things that make their day easier with the kids.
Right.
And often, the product that they're trying to improve already exists and is very popular, but they're changing their own thing. They'll do a patent search to see if there's a patent, and then they go ahead and either file a patent or, you know, try to bring the product to market.
Yeah, because one of the questions that I get pretty commonly is, you know, can you get a patent on an improvement, you know, to something that already exists? Mm-hmm. And the answer is a definite yes. I mean, probably 98% of the, you know, patents out there are for improvements of existing stuff.
You know? And that you didn't have to necessarily invent the first thing.
No. No, because it's rare that somebody comes up with Velcro or Kevlar or Teflon. Like that is really rare.
From scratch.
New
some
stuff.
Some brand new thing.
Yeah. It's like I think Carl Sagan said, if you wanted to make a apple pie from scratch, first you have to create the universe.
Right.
Yeah, it's it's definitely an interesting world, but I mean there's money to be made. I mean, obviously people license things on a regular basis, but I think the misconception, and we were talking about misconceptions with inventors last week, is that people just somehow think it's just they're going to make millions. I mean, like they do with their invention, they think, "Well, I've got an idea. I've got a patent. Now I'm just going to license it and I'm just going to sit home and go to the mailbox every day and there's going to be
my licensing check.
Six-figure checks." And often I don't know what the exact stats are, but I mean, if it's a percent or two of people that actually ever really make any significant money licensing.
Like say a great invention makes $100, right? Just as a unit of measurement. What would the same thing if it was licensed make?
I don't know. I don't,
is it half of that? Is it a tenth of that?
It's hard to say because it's almost, in a way, it's an apples and oranges kind of thing. Because when you build your own company, obviously there's more profit in there for you because,
right.
You know, it's all whatever you can get is yours. It's not, you know, you're not giving away 95% of the profit
right.
to another company.
But I figure you got to pay the manufacturer. You got to pay the licensing agent. You're paying a lot of people down in this process of licensing.
Yeah, and generally your license agreement, as far as the royalties are concerned, are not really based on what the retail price is, because the retail price could go up or down or whatever.
Right.
It's usually off the manufactured cost.
Yeah, if you can get a licensing deal off the retail price, then good for you. I mean,
let the good times roll.
But, on average, people ask this a lot, what's the normal royalty rate? I mean, those royalty rates, I've seen them as low as 1% and 2%, and I've seen them as high as 8% to 10%, but 5% is usually a
good... But that's of the manufacturer...
Mm-hmm. Right, not the retail.
Right. So in other words, if you come to me with a product, and I'll use the things we're talking about, the suggested retail price, what we would pay in a store is $10. Well,
right. Maybe
that company that you're licensing to only sells it to that store for $5.
Right.
The $5 is what you get the 5% on. So, you know, they have to sell a lot of stuff. Now, if that was your own product, you might get 20, 30, 40, 50% on that same $5 if you were selling it yourself. So you do the math. I mean, I've done licensing deals, but I've always been in the manufacturing and selling myself business. It's a lot more work. It's a much, much bigger investment, time and money. But, ultimately you can make a lot more money and you have more control.
Right.
And you could also go ahead and license other products once you're in business. And I think that's a potential home run.
Right,
people.
Yeah, many years ago, there was a device called the blind spot mirror. It was basically a little round mirror that you put on your mirror in the car, okay, the little side mirror, so that you could check out your blind spot.
Right.
Okay. And when I first started my business, I went up to Minnesota to an inventors conference, and I heard Ron Dosey, the inventor of that, ask the question. He said, has anybody ever bought one of those? And a couple of people raised their hands, and he says, thanks for the nickel. And that was kind of when the light bulb went on to me. He's like, okay, he makes a nickel for every one of those sold. It takes a lot of nickels before you make any money on this.
And that's the thing. So people think that, if they have a product that they're going to make a lot of money. And what happens is they make those nickels. And then again, there's that whole, will the company that you license to actually do a good job of selling it? Will they pay you? I mean, there's a lot of...
Yeah, but he wants to license it to a car manufacturer that
right.
puts it in every car.
Yeah, but it was more of an aftermarket.
Well, if you can get that kind of a thing where it's part of something else that it's just going to be included, that's a great potential licensing deal for
good.
You.
It'd be good, but one of the worst companies to try to deal with as far as getting an innovative product is the automobile industry.
Wow, yeah.
And that was when they were doing well.
Yeah, it's tough. It's not as easy as people think. They just always seem to think that, they don't want to do the work themselves, so they just call up and say, I just want to license it, like as if it's, we push
right.
a couple of buttons and all of a sudden it happens.
I just send it out to this manufacturer. Oh, they got it now. Thanks.
Yeah,
your checks start next week.
Yeah, that world is full of rejection. It's like calling on retailers. You get mostly no's, and when you do get a yes, then you still have to work through all the actual details of whatever that particular deal is going to be. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
No, because I had one inventor that came to me with the concept about having a compartment in each car on the door where you could actually put a little umbrella, okay? And the umbrella
right.
would be included. And they wanted to approach the automobile industry for doing that. And I'm just like, this is an industry that is very anti-individual inventor. Okay?
Right.
you got a long road to go on this one.
And even though we're seeing more and more today, companies are seeking out outside innovation, which is good because it gives inventors hope that companies aren't so insular where they used to just come up with their own products and they would never take outside ideas. Companies are actually looking because they recognize that, wow, there's millions of people out there that may have better ideas than we do.
Right.
And one of the great things about the current recession and economic downturn is a lot of companies have laid off and fired their research and development groups, which means that the only way they can get new products and grow is from individual inventors
outside.
Yeah, I think the smart companies have, and there are some that have set up actual very structured programs to induce these kinds of calls and emails and presentations from inventors.
So they let people know we're open for business. If you have some ideas, send them our way.
Yeah, just yesterday I saw that Edison Nation was promoting a invention contest in from Walmart.
Yeah, I saw that too, which is great because you usually don't see
what
that.
What is Edison Nation? What is that?
It's part of a bigger company called Inventus, and they're in North Carolina, and they have that show on PBS, Everyday Edison.
Right.
And so they're a service provider company. They do a lot of engineering and product development and all that kind of work. And so, but they have relationships with some retailers where they try to get the inventor crowd that they work with in front of these opportunities, like what Walmart's offering.
So that's a huge score to be in front of Walmart.
Yeah, and I don't remember the details, but Walmart had very specific details of we want you to invent in this area.
It was green. It was a green space.
Green
initiative.
Space, okay.
Yeah. But then the categories, it was like housewares, clothing, toys. I mean, they're obviously looking. So hey, if you got an idea and there's an open invitation, you make your pitch.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you mentioned that it was green because several years ago, one of the top people, I think it was from the Sierra Club, actually went over to Walmart, okay? And a lot of people, in the green environmental industry is like, oh, you've sold out. And he's like, no, this is one of the largest, retailers out there. If I can get them turned around, think of the impact.
Right,
And looks like, and he's still there as far as I know, and it sounds like this is part of that.
And it's a little sidebar about this whole green initiative. This is not the first green initiative. I've seen a couple come and go, and I think, and I've been blogging about this a lot, that it's really up to the retailers and the corporations to market and promote green products. So in other words, if you go into a Walmart who is now looking for green products, if they don't put up signs, displays saying, this product, buy it, it's green, it's good for the environment, then the movement that we're seeing now is going to go away like it did in the past. So
now, is it common where you have like a big retailer say, hey, we want these kind of products?
No, I was actually surprised by that because they don't want a cattle call. They don't want a million people calling up their buying team, but it's not unheard of. But, if you see that once or twice a year, I think that's generous.
But like, they're now green obviously is hot, but have you ever seen something like, oh, we need products in this way or we need solar products?
Well, I know that, in the past, Staples has run a contest where people, they want office products.
Like,
people
need home office products because so many people are working out of their house, so start inventing home office.
Yeah.
And I know the Dial Corporation has run contests. Mm-hmm. Thoughtless Starch runs an annual contest. So it's getting to be more and more popular with large companies to run invention contests because once again, they've fired most of their R&D people, and they've got to depend on outside ideas.
And they're crowdsourcing, so you get the masses out there, coming up with ideas that, it's not even on their radar.
Right.
They're just picking the good, the good ones. So.
Well, with the internet, too, they can get the word out quickly. But, you're going to see, I think we're going to continue to see that. But, look, there are enough people out there in the invention world that have ideas that will, on their own, go ahead and approach these companies anyway. So I think sometimes it's publicity mixed with they're actually looking for product, right. And they want to find those few good ideas that can allow them to be different from their own competitors.
How many people do you think will participate in something like this?
Oh,
is it thousands?
Oh, definitely.
It'll be thousands. And that's one license agreement that you want to read very, very carefully.
Yeah,
okay?
Sure.
Is because generally, if a company says, bring us your idea, if they've got in there that they're actually going to develop it and tweak it and manufacture it and all like that, the license agreement will probably say that they want to recover their money, their investment, before you start getting a royalty. So you need to read those license agreements very carefully.
So sometimes those contests aren't really the best way to go?
Well, it all depends on the inventor and their situation. If an inventor has no money, but they've got the idea and their idea gets accepted and they don't put any money into it.
Right.
And then maybe, two or three years from now after the companies recover their money, they start getting a check then it's a good deal.
Right.
I think the good path that inventors need to know how this really works is if you have a product idea and you have either filed for a patent or have a patent, and preferably you have a patent because, that, again, that gives you the leverage to go to a company with something that you actually own, so to speak.
Right.
You know, there's two paths that somebody can license will take. One is that they can create their own sell sheets. Of course, they can have them reviewed by a professional or have make sure that they...
Are there examples of what these sell sheets look like anywhere?
Sure. I mean, they're everywhere. I mean, we've got them, and they're on the internet. They're readily available. But if you're the type that you're salesy, you're not shy, you know, you have some business acumen, and you're not afraid to go out there and obviously hear a lot of no,
right,
you can create your own sell sheets, create a presentation, make sure your product looks good, you know, all those things that in preparation you have to have. And you can identify those companies and go out and start knocking on doors or go to trade shows.
Who is the person in the company you talk to?
You're going to have, some people actually have licensing divisions. Some, usually it's marketing department, it's a VP of sales. I mean, there are a lot of places you can go. I've had clients go to various people. Sometimes they just go right to the top depending on the size of the company. Mm-hmm. There's R&D departments. I mean, Ron, I don't know what your experiences are, but people go to a lot of different places inside of a company.
Yeah, I know. I had one client that actually had a device that goes on a computer monitor that they wanted to license, and they went to a particular company, and they started at the bottom, and the people loved it. And they went to the middle people. People loved it. They went to the top level. People loved it. Got to be to the president. The president says, I don't like it, and they turned it down.
Yeah. So that's
it's better to go top down.
Well,
is that
yeah.
the lesson there?
Well, I mean, if you're going to get rejected by the head of the company. But, yeah, I don't know if you know, every company is different. Every structure is different.
But is it something you just call, like you go online, you find – their main phone number, you go, hey, I got this idea, I'm licensing, who's the right person in the organization to talk to?
That's certainly a normal and age-old way to do it. And again, so I think that the big thing for people to understand is that you can do this on your own, but you obviously have to get educated. You have to understand how the business works, how these contracts work. Again, Ron mentioned a book, there's courses. But if you're not the type of person that can do it, is afraid to do it, it just doesn't feel like they're capable.
And you only get one shot at this guy. I mean, if you go there and have a bad presentation and then all of a sudden you get your act together and hire somebody else, that you might have missed your opportunity.
Yeah,
right?
Unless you have like something that they really want. Yeah, right. they may just dismiss you. But if you're not the type of person that is capable of doing it yourself, then you find a good agent and you let them do the work for you. But just realize that, A, you know, it's rare that you make a lot of money unless you get with a big company and they're selling a ton of product, because you get that those nickels, so to speak.
Right.
And if you work with agents and other people, they're taking those little pieces of your profit too. So it's you know, it's about making some money and proving that your product can actually sell, and just that nice feeling of being able to do it. But people's expectations sometimes get out of line. If they keep them in check.
Yeah. And I think the thing to remember is you are going to get rejected. Okay, you know, if you're going to go to the very first company and they say yes, that's pretty rare.
Right.
You're going to get rejected, and it's going to take a whole lot longer than you think.
Right.
Yeah, and you have to be organized. You have to have your stuff together and make that best possible pitch the best way you can. So.
All right, so this has been a great session where we've been talking about licensing and all the ins and outs and everything, and it's really been super.
Good stuff.
Jim, Lee, thanks. This has been another great session with Launch.
Yep. See you next week.